The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Samara Weaving on her breakthrough role in the new film Ready or Not. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. First-time guest. First time, for probably for many of you, even hearing the name Samara Weaving, I would guess. But this was a unique opportunity, I thought, because you may have heard about this film, Ready or Not. It's now in theaters. It opened just last week. It's one of those films that kind of snuck up on me and I think a lot of critics and audiences. When I saw the trailer, I was like, I didn't even know this movie existed, and I suddenly was super intrigued by it. And lo and behold, when I saw the finished product, it's a wild, fun movie that I definitely recommend. If you don't know anything about it, basically, it's kind of a horror thriller. It's about Samara Weaving plays a young woman who gets married into a very wealthy family and quickly finds that she suddenly has to be kind of indoctrinated through a game that is played, and the game basically entails her being hunted. So it's a pretty dark premise, but it's played in a very arch and funny way. It's super entertaining, has a great ensemble around Samara, including Andie MacDowell and Henry Zerny. You may not know that name either. Henry Zerny, I've always been obsessed with ever since he was Kittredge in the first Mission Impossible movie. I've been like holding out hope ever since that that character comes back because he was amazing. And I have a feeling, I bet he does come back in one of these next two Mission Impossible movies. Anyway, sidetrack. But the biggest, I think, talking point around this film has been the leading performance from Samara Weaving. Samara, you probably haven't seen her in a lot of things. She was in a miniseries remake of Picnic at Hanging Rock. She was in the Netflix film The Babysitter. She had a choice little role in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri as Penelope. Very funny in that. But she's now suddenly getting a lot of really interesting opportunities. And this one, this performance in this film really stands out, and if you watch it, you'll see that she definitely has some star power and charisma, and she's definitely one to watch. She has just finished shooting the new Bill and Ted film, guys. Come on. Amazing. She plays Alex Winter, a.k.a. Bill's daughter in it. Can't wait to see that. She's also in a crazy new action film called Guns Akimbo, opposite our old buddy Daniel Radcliffe. So lots of really cool things happening for Samara. And I'm always intrigued in getting actors at that kind of moment when they're about to break and it's all kind of just starting to happen. And that's definitely the moment for Samara right now. And if you're wondering about her last name, yes, she is related. She is the niece of the great Australian actor Hugo Weaving. You know him from, of course, the Matrix films and so many other things. So definitely some talent in the bloodlines of the Weaving family. So real fun to talk to Samara on this conversation of the podcast this week. Other things to mention. Well, guys, I just got back from D23 in Los Angeles, which, if you don't know it, is essentially Comic-Con for all things Disney. And Disney has enough things just to have their own Comic-Con. They have, obviously, Pixar and Star Wars and Marvel and the animated films and now Disney Plus. And I'm probably forgetting 1,000 other things and all the Fox properties now. So there's an embarrassment of riches, and D23 is kind of their big fan event where they bring out tons of stars, make a ton of big announcements, show lots of exclusive footage, and also give some access to the press like myself. So I did a bunch of interviews with, it felt like on Saturday, I felt like I interviewed every movie star on the planet in the course of like 3 hours. So it was everybody from Dwayne Johnson to Angelina Jolie to Anna Kendrick. It was just, it was, everybody was there for all manner of films. And it was exhausting, but a lot of fun too. Oh, and by the way, and the Star Wars cast. Spoke to Daisy Ridley, our old buddy. Spoke to J.J. Abrams, John Boyega, Kelly Marie Tran. It was a lot of fun. So we're just starting to, we're going to just start to roll out all these interviews. There's a lot of them. So look out for, I'll be touting them on my social media, Joshua Horowitz on Twitter and Instagram, but also follow along MTV News, and they will spread the good word on those interviews. They were a lot of fun, a lot of cool conversations. So hope you guys enjoy that one. Also worth noting, new Comedy Central After Hours episode up with the great Danny McBride, Adam Devine, and Edie Patterson. They are the stars of The Righteous Gemstones on HBO. We did our own kind of riff on Hot Ones, an homage, a parody, a tribute to that very popular web series. We did ours a little bit differently, went a different direction. I'm very proud of it. Those guys were a blast to shoot with. It's very funny. And follow that. You can check that one out on Comedy Central's YouTube page. I've sent it out over on Instagram and Twitter, so highly recommend that one. And that's about it. That's enough plugs for 1 week, right, guys? Okay, on to the main event. Here is a bright, shining new star. Meet Samara Weaving. So as you can see, it's going to be more casual.
I love it.
Should we just have a chat?
Let's just have a little cheeky chat.
Welcome to Cheeky Chats.
Welcome to Cheeky Chats.
With Samara Weaving. Hi there.
Hello.
Great to meet you.
You too.
How's the press tour treating you? This is probably a good one because there's some good energy in the
universe.
There's
some good energy. Yeah, it's good. The reviews seem, everyone seems to like it, which is nice.
I'm sure you saw this one. I mean, I as the days have gone by, like it does feel like it's like gaining momentum. But I saw the one from Guillermo del Toro yesterday, the tweet.
Oh, the tweet. Yeah. I mean, I've stayed off of looking.
It's too much. It's a little.
Well, I think just for me, if I care about the reviews and the judgment, then I don't know. It just, maybe it's just not a healthy thing to do down the road.
I think it's very healthy to
just separate myself. But my fiance like texts me the good ones and he reads them out loud. And yeah, it's nice.
You need somebody to separate the, yeah, no. I mean, when you have the likes of Guillermo, like not only talking about the movie, but your performance.
I know, I'm still in shock about it. It'll hit me in like a week and
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you should enjoy this ride because as you know, you've been doing this. It's not like this is your first rodeo, but this is a different kind of an experience,
yeah.
I would think.
I should enjoy it more. I have such bad anxiety. Like the movie making part is fantastic. The press stuff gets me.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to treat you nicely today. Don't worry. Yes, you can see.
Oh, I mean, you could treat me how?
You did a shit. No, you didn't. You did a great job. Why am I saying she did a shitty job? What's wrong with me?
You can. It made me feel better. But anyway.
No. Are you the kind of person, though, that, like, on a job, you expect the best or worst? Like, you're on a job. Like, are you expecting, like, when I eventually see this in theaters or on TV, like, I'm going to be disappointed or I'm going to be excited?
I never know because a lot of it's in the edit.
Yeah.
So even if you feel really good, you just never know.
Was that a lesson you learned early on? Like, oh wait, this is kind of out of my
control. Yeah, from age 14, it's like, okay, I can just, you know, do the best I can do and hope for the best.
Yeah.
And luckily with this, they nailed it.
Clearly.
Yeah.
So did you notice a shift in the recent months of like when people started, at least whether you were noticing
honestly,
it or friends
wasn't
were
paying attention.
Well, the good thing is you've been working too.
Yeah. I've got something. Yeah. To take my mind
cool.
off things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, when I saw it in theaters with a whole crowd of people at a Fantasia Fest, that's when I calmed down after seeing their reaction.
Had you seen the film before?
Yeah, but with, you know, execs and producers, totally, and everyone's going to say, oh, it's great. So, yeah. You know, you don't know the honest opinion until you're there with, you know, the, like, real
actual human beings
horror fans.
Yeah, and that's the right audience to kind of really gauge it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I haven't seen it with, like, a packed audience, but I'm sure this is, like, the kind of thing where it's going to...
Yeah, like, I was biting my nails for the opening, and then when everyone started laughing at the right moments and being afraid at the right moments, I... calm down.
You're like, oh wait, we kind of
oh, I think,
did what we
I think
were
it's
trying
in the
to
pocket.
Do.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So okay, so let's go back. Is this your first podcast? I feel like I was doing some research.
This is my third.
Oh fuck!
I hadn't until 2 days ago.
Okay, well.
Yeah, so now, sorry. But this is the best one.
Yeah,
come
clearly,
on.
3 minutes in, you can already tell the
vibe
is different.
And this is my first one-on-one podcast.
Okay, that I consider so, that
yeah.
a solo exclusive
yeah,
with Samara.
Yeah, 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 definitely.
Okay, so talk to me. Growing up, what did your parents do? Where were you? I know you kind of floated around a bit. You mm-hmm. you traveled a bit. So what do you consider, like, where did you grow up? If somebody asks you that, what do you say?
I say it's a long story.
How much time do you have?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was born in Australia, but I left at 2 weeks old, and we grew up in Fiji, Singapore, Indonesia, a little bit in Italy, and then moved back to Australia, and then within Australia, we moved pretty much every 2 to 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay, so what accounted, what, I assume based on what your parents did or what was...
Yeah, I mean, they're just... I think they just love moving. I think that's why they're still married.
Keep it,
every
keep it
2 years.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. My mom worked for museums. She has a PhD in Peranakan art, which is very niche. Mm. It's ancient Singaporean art.
I'm a little rusty on mine.
Yeah. A little rusty on Peranakan art, yeah.
You may have made that word up for all I know. I'm going to fact check this afterwards.
Yeah, keeping you on your toes.
Yeah.
And then Dad, he was a filmmaker, and then he worked for corporations when we were growing up.
Uh-huh.
And then now he's has a PhD in film noir and is a professor of film at a university in Australia.
That's pretty cool. So were you exposed to a lot of specifically film noir growing
yeah,
up?
Yeah, yeah, a lot of Ingrid Bergman yeah. and Betty Davis. Yeah, all
so
those
did,
greats.
Did you absorb that and love it, or did you reject it because it was your dad's love?
I loved them, but I think because he has a critical mind of films, right. He was, you know, teaching us at a young age, you know, like, oh, do you look at that shot? It's beautiful. And yeah. we were like, we just want to enjoy the movie, Dad.
Yeah.
but now I
can
find
I watch Dumb and Dumber, Dad?
It.
Like,
no, but it was a great, like, education as a kid. Yeah, you soak that up.
Yeah. So, okay, so... By nature of moving around a lot, do you mm-hmm. feel? How do you feel that defined you as a kid? Like, does that because that can make you adaptable, or it can make you?
I'm not adaptable
okay.
at all.
So went the opposite way.
However, I really appreciate it now because I was always a performer,
mm.
and the lifestyle of a performer you go to different cities and countries, and you have to make a whole new family
yeah.
on set. You meet 200 people in one day and you work with them for, you know, a couple months and then say goodbye
right.
and you do it all over again. And I don't think I would be as loving of that if it wasn't for growing up with the same
that
environment.
Is interesting. Yeah, because I've talked to a lot of actors about that. It always boggles my mind because I think it happens for a lot of actors, like especially early on, that, I mean, you know this, like, by the end of a great experience, you've really bonded with these people.
You really do.
And you're like, and you feel like you're going to know
when will I see you again?
Yeah, you're going to see them like yeah. the rest of your lives. And the reality is often like...
Yeah, it's like 1 in 10 films, you might find a real, really good friend
yeah.
that you do hang out with
and
a
just,
lot.
And it's not even like malicious, it's just life.
No, it's just...
It gets in the way.
Busy.
It's, yeah.
Hey, are you in LA? No, I'm in
yeah.
Serbia or... you know.
Back in Serbia.
Yeah, back in Serbia.
So the upbringing has served you well in that, because so you kind of had a crash course in that.
And I also think it contributed to my love of the work, because I was so shy and have severe anxiety. And my parents put me into drama courses at a really young age, because yeah. I wouldn't speak to other children for, you know, weeks. And as a way of getting me out of my shell, they'd put me in drama classes, and I really loved it.
That was the outlet.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Again, that it's a recurring theme. I mean, I'm similar. Like, I talk more on mic than I do off mic. I feel
it's
like
it's strange. Most people don't associate actors with introverts, but I definitely
yeah. So what was that? Because when you talk about anxiety
mm-hmm.
growing up,
yeah.
and has that something that's always kind of stuck with you in some fashion?
Always. Oh yeah. Right now, I'm freaking out.
No, stop. There's a lot of liquor up here. It's like 10:30 in the morning, so I don't know if we're really ready for
liquid
that. But
courage,
if you,
sure.
There you go.
I got 9 of these to do, otherwise, for sure.
God. But how does that manifest now? Does it get to kind of affect your life or work for the negative?
I don't remember not being anxious. So I don't know. I mean, you know, there's definitely ways to cope with it and things not to do and, you know, therapy and all that jazz. And it's great, you know. And I think the more I talk about it, the more people are like, oh, me too.
We all
you
do.
Know?
Yeah. So what about on a film set? Is that because like...
That's my happy place.
Is it?
That's where I can just be a lunatic and don't feel judged.
That's great. Well, yeah, that's the key, not to feel judged. Not to feel like... to feel that there's freedom and...
Or judged, but in a sort of critical way, not... personal way.
Yeah, not a personal judgment, but like we're all in this together, let's fuck around and see what
and
happens.
You can play with it and you're not being yourself, you're being a character, which, you know, I don't know, it's, I think I saw a quote where it's, you know, it's easy to be a character but it's hard to be yourself with actors.
Okay, so early on they put you into, did you say like acting classes, like a theater program?
In schools and outside of school programs, you know.
And you do you remember immediately finding that to be like a safe place, like a fun outlet?
Yeah, I think my first role, I was like 5 or 6 at a production and I played the Grinch. And I was like 4 foot tall running around, like blonde hair, blue eyes, thinking I was the scariest thing possible. And, you know, all the parents laughing and I was had a great time.
Explains a lot about where you've ended up so far, your career, and the kind of material you're in. Goes back to the Grinch.
It all comes back to the Grinch.
when does it go from fun to something serious in terms of like, I'm actually going to give this a go?
I honestly, I've been asked this question a few times and I can't pinpoint a light bulb moment. Right. I think it was a natural succession from doing it at school. And I was, you know, always doing theater outside of school. And I just, anywhere it was, I would gravitate towards.
Yeah.
And then, I don't even remember when. I think I auditioned for a show called Out of the Blue in Australia when I was 13 or 14.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, of course, you know, it wasn't a decision I made. It just was there. And I was so grateful that my parents really supported me on doing that.
Well, they probably saw how happy it made you in other forms.
Yeah. And I think I was quite determined as well, you know, because I loved it so much and, I get to do this all day, every day. And great. Yeah. Okay, sign me up.
What? Backtracking a little bit. So you mentioned the film noir being exposed to through your dad. Like, what were you into as a kid? Like, what were? Do you remember actors or filmmakers or like? Were you into Australia? I mean, that was the heyday also of like when like this like wave of amazing Australian talent
but
was taking
Australia,
over.
They love real dark movies, and I was really young, so.
You weren't watching Animal Kingdom at 12 years old.
Yeah, Snowtown. I don't know. What was I into? In Indonesia, it was hard to... We couldn't really go to the films because they were all either subtitled or dubbed. And in most of Asia as well, I think. And my parents were really adamant about not letting us watch television too much. Mm-hmm. You know, we sort of had to use our imagination. And Mom always made us paint, you know.
Right.
If we didn't do our homework, she would just say, well, if you just do a watercolor, we'll... Don't let it slide, don't worry.
I'll make that bargain every time,
so
every
sort of,
single time.
Yeah, so we sort of used our imagination a lot, and we'd just make short films and do skits for our parents. And my dad had a huge, it was almost like a library, it was a whole room, but instead of bookshelves, it was just full of DVDs. So I remember watching The Breakfast Club and falling in love with that, and I watched it about 17 times.
Nice.
And we had a... like a dodgy copy of Friends because it was the only way we could find English-speaking DVDs. So I was in love with Friends. I have great memories of my dad coming home and us watching that together. But we only had up to season 6. I didn't realize it had finished until I was like,
well, it's like
18. I was like, wait, it
just
finished?
Go on forever.
Oh, no. Yeah, exactly.
Home and Away season 39 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, 3,000. Episode. I remember reading the scripts on Home and Away, and it was like episode 5,000, you know, 149. I was like, great.
Do they actually put the number on?
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Were you traumatized at all by, I noticed by the math that The Ring probably came out when you were like around 10.
That was my first horror film I ever saw, and it traumatized me.
I'm not
I
even
think
talking about the film,
I'm
talking about the character name.
Oh, yeah.
Samara.
Oh, but do you know my sister's name is Morgan?
So it's like your parents knew something. It's something in the water.
I don't know what happened, but Samara Morgan, yeah. That was the first scary film I watched, and I remember the girls at high school were really excited to sneakily put it on when the parents were away, and it was kind of an excuse to like cuddle up to boys, but I was just sat in a corner rocking, like I couldn't,
like,
and I was trying
tomorrow?
To leave. Yeah, this was not fun at all. Yeah.
Thus began your love affair with horror.
Exactly. So they're really fun to make.
They're fun to make. Again, therapy. You're probably working through something.
Well, yeah, it's like I'm paying someone to make my anxiety even worse.
This is a win-win for everybody, I think. Okay, so at what point do you discover that your uncle's kind of a big deal? Hugo Weaving is your uncle who...
I don't remember a moment. I remember in primary school... I think I was trying to brag about it. I was like, he's in something. He was in The Matrix, and The Sims was huge. And I think it had this similar brand name.
Sure.
So everyone was like, your uncle's in The Sims? And I was like, I need to ask. Because I wasn't allowed to watch The Matrix. I think the first film I saw him, it was when I was looking through my dad's DVDs. I think I must have been about 13. And I found Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and I loved it.
Amazing.
I was like, my uncle's awesome.
Yeah, pretty cool one to discover. Mm-hmm. So, and how is that? I mean, I think your first film was in a film with him, correct?
Yeah, one of the first.
Right.
Yeah.
So how has that influenced? Has he been a direct influence through your career, or does it feel like something very apart from your development as an actor?
A bit of both. I mean, he's really first and foremost Uncle Hugo.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, of course we talk about, his son is a fantastic actor as well. And so, my cousin was at clown school in France at Le Coq. And so we're all these like gypsy actor artist types, which is so much fun to be around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you eventually did watch The Matrix, were you put in a weird spot where you were rooting for your uncle against Neo? Do you feel like you were like, why is Keanu Reeves beating the shit out of my uncle?
No, I think I was looking at it with a critical mind, like, oh, that's so cool how they did that. And yeah, I just loved that. Those films were so mind-blowing at the time.
Yeah. Did you get the heads up from Keanu on set that there was another Matrix brewing?
I didn't. I got to read about it on Twitter.
Come on. Your new friend is not giving you
I
the
know,
inside dope.
Keanu.
So you mentioned the first gig, which was Out of the Blue. Out of the Blue, right,
yeah.
In Australia. And is that considered a soap kind of a thing? Or?
It was a drama series. It ran for 6 months or something.
Got
and,
it.
Yeah.
And that goes into another longer running
gig,
right?
Yeah, then I did Home and Away. I did for 6 weeks while I was at school, and then I had to make a big decision. Do I go to university or Home and Away? And
what was that? Was that a big decision? Or was
yeah,
it kind
I think
of
my
a...
parents, they sort of sat me down. They were like, well, what do you love it? Like, is that your end goal?
Yeah.
And in this industry, if you can get work, then do the work. And
yeah.
I learned a lot of technical stuff on that job, so...
So
very grateful.
So educate me, Home and Away versus, for instance, what, Neighbors? Is that another big one?
Yeah, they're similar. One's set in like a suburban Australia and one's by the beach.
Got it.
I did
and
the
which
beach
one are you? You're the beach
one.
That sounds like a better gig.
Well, you would think so, but it's based in this magical place called Summer Bay.
With actual magic?
No.
Oh, I got really excited. I'm going to go.
I wish it was.
3,000 episodes
yeah,
of catch up.
But in Australia, we do have winter. So we were on a beach in the middle of winter, We'd have to, like, cut Sam's lips are blue and, yeah.
TV magic.
We all got glandular fever and shingles and, yeah, it was crazy.
That's great. Well, you learned everything you needed to know about what this business would be early
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah. After you do that, you can do anything.
At what point do you start to... at that point, are you already thinking about... making a run at a career here in the States? Like, is that an end-all, be-all goal? Because you can be probably a jobbing, successful actor in Australia.
Yeah, that was the goal, was to just keep working. And I was so young on Home and Away. I started when I was 17.
Right.
So I was just excited that I got to go to drama school every day and, you know, got to do this. But, well, you know, oh, I get to see what a set looks like. And this, you know, it was a huge production. And I thought that was really cool. And I just wanted to keep doing that.
How soon did, like, when did you come to the States for the first time?
I came to this, I'm so bad with dates. It was straight after I finished Home and Away. So maybe I was 21 or 20. I can't remember. So I'm so, you're going to have to fact check this.
I'm going to have to get the staff really in overtime on this one tomorrow. Jeez.
I came over to get representation, but I still lived in Australia because I could get work there, and I'd seen a lot of people move to America when they were still known in Australia.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to get work there. So I was just auditioning from Australia and luckily
putting yourself on tape or Skype.
I'm putting myself
whatever,
on tape and I could still work and do like ambassador things in Australia and make money.
Got it.
And then moved to the States when I finally booked a job there.
Got it.
Yeah.
So was there a template for you, like an actor or actress to emulate at that point? Like a path that, or again, at that point it was like,
I was just going with the flow.
Yeah,
like,
let's see what
I get. Sure, take me. Anyone want to hire me? Great.
What's the first big Hollywood audition that like got you excited? Do you remember one that was like?
Oh, I must have done, because I was unemployed for nearly 2 years. Millions. Yeah, I honestly, anything and everything that needed like a 20-year-old woman, I was there.
Were they TV series, movies, everything?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you find yourself going out for the same kinds of parts?
No, completely different.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah.
And why? Because that seems relatively lucky to that you were already being thought of in different capacities.
Well, I thank my team for doing that. They didn't pigeonhole me. You know, they really believed in me that I could. You know, that I could be versatile in roles, which was fantastic.
So what's the first American production that you were
I think I was in like 2 scenes of Monster Trucks.
Right. And the worldwide global phenomenon.
Yeah. Oh, what a hit.
Again, there's a lesson there somewhere. Yeah. I don't know what the lesson is, but there's a lesson.
Well, it was great. I mean, I wasn't carrying the film on my shot. I was just, it was really great to see how American productions work, just to see a little snippet of it.
I feel like I've actually heard it's a decent movie, despite like
it
being
seen it.
Dumped
it's
into
really
whatever. No,
I
it's okay.
It.
It'll be okay.
And then the big one was The Babysitter.
The Babysitter. So,
yeah.
So for Netflix, directed by McGee, cool ensemble cast, you're the lead, you are the babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
So did that feel like a jump in terms of like the production of being the lead in a production like that?
Yeah, really a lot of pressure. I was freaking
again,
out.
Back to
know?
The anxiety.
Yeah, well, because, I hadn't done an American accent for that long before, so I had a dialect coach, and I really wanted to, you know, because it was sort of the big, you know, opportunity. If I failed at that, I didn't know if I was going to be hired afterwards.
Right.
So I really wanted to do a good job and put a lot of pressure on myself. But McGee was wonderful to work with.
He's a
so
big personality.
Lovely.
He's
so sweet.
Yeah.
So he really calmed me down.
I moderated a panel that he did at Comic-Con years ago for the Terminator movie he did.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, he's like such a showman.
Oh,
like, you know, usually when you have to moderate something, it's like, you've got a job to do. Like, you're kind of like traffic cop. I get up there and literally I'm like starting to introduce the cast and I'm like, and here's McGee. And McGee just is like, thanks, Josh. He comes up to the podium and I like sat down for an hour.
Oh, yeah. He would have made your job really easy.
It's like, perfect.
Mm-hmm. That's McGee.
So was there a metric for success on that one? Because that's the weird thing on Netflix things. My sense is that was watched by a lot of people. That like
yeah,
it
I
did.
Think so. Yeah.
Do they ever tell you anything, or is it like they just say
I don't
B
know
plus,
how
A
the
minus,
numbers
you did
good. I don't know how the numbers work with Netflix. I think someone said to me that it was the most watched Netflix original at that time, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Sounds good.
I wouldn't be able to figure it out. I'd have no way of knowing.
But career-wise, you notice there's that changes things a little bit?
Yeah, more and more doors started opening, especially with that genre, and getting into more and more rooms and meeting with different casting directors. It definitely started rolling after that. And that's when I made the move to LA.
So you made the move then?
Yeah.
And you're living in LA now?
My manager was like, I think you can make the jump. Yeah, come over. Get over here.
How's LA treating you so far?
I love it.
Yeah?
Yeah. It took like a year to feel like home. But again, back to my roots of moving around, it wasn't necessarily a huge shock.
But remember, the template that we've discovered for you is you need to move every 2 years. Yeah. So welcome to New York in 2021.
Great. I'd love to.
When and how did Three Billboards happen? Small role, but like a really key fun role.
That was incredible. Amazing. I have to thank my fiance for that, because I was such a fan of Martin McDonagh's work, but Jimmy, who's a writer, but when I was learning the lines for the audition, he brought up the notion that he's a playwright. You got to get every single line right.
He's one of
and
those.
That character was written so precisely. So I had a lot of likes.
Right.
And I made sure I got every one of those like idioms in the right place.
Yep.
And at the rap party, Martin said, you know, you were the only person who auditioned that got the lines right.
That's amazing.
I was like, oh, thank God. Thank you, Jimmy.
What is that experience on set like? You're working up at John Hawkes, who's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Francis McDormand.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like the all-stars of the all-stars.
I think there's a reason why Martin works with the same people all the time, because they were all beautiful people.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't standoffish at all, even though I was just there for 2 weeks. They'd take me out for dinner and come around to my house, you know, let's have a glass of wine. They were so welcoming. I can't thank them enough.
Does that spoil you a little bit, like being on a production like that, again, with that caliber of actor and that director and that script, like the whole, from stem to stern, that's like as good as you're going to get.
I mean, 100%.
Right.
Yeah.
You're like,
exactly.
Tell Team Weaving, I want 10 more of those. What you just did, let's do that again.
Let's do that again. Yeah, I think I called my team afterwards and I said, I'll play a waiter for this man again. Like, I'll anything.
Right. Well, again, the lesson, like, 2 weeks, relatively small part, but mm-hmm. like, good, great for the career, great for your life experience.
Yeah,
like,
seem
who
to
cares?
It.
Like,
people
in a way.
Seem to like it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And has one of it's ironically that I was looking online the other day when I knew that you were coming in. I'm like, I need to get, not for purposes of having a
view.
<you."> No, it wasn't that. I just want a t-shirt or hat that says, Penelope said begets. I feel like that needs to be on some kind of
merch. That would be amazing. I would love that shirt.
We'll get it for you for next time.
Anger begets anger.
So let's talk a little bit. We talked a little bit at the beginning of Ready or Not, but I want to dive a little bit deeper into this one, because this is such like a wonderful, kind of a surprise for a lot of people, I think, of like, you know, we see a lot of, I mean, again, I was going to say horror, thriller, comedy. I don't know what really genre this is.
It's a genre mashup.
It is kind of a mashup.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's surprising people just like how expertly done it is, the sense of humor about it, the performances, the casting. It just feels like this is one where it kind of all clicked.
It's really hard to pull that off.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do.
So talk to me about, did you know from the start that this had the ingredients for something that was excuse me, a little special?
Definitely the script 100% thread that line really, really well. But I've learned that even if the script is genius, it's the execution of it that really is what matters.
Yes. What's the challenge? Let's set this up a little bit. So you play Grace, who mm-hmm. we're meeting her on her wedding day, being kind of welcomed to a bit of an eccentric, odd family. We can see the we see the seeds are there from the start. This is not like,
Not your average family.
And just as it progresses, we see how batshit crazy they are.
Oh, it gets so mental, doesn't it?
So I guess on the plus side, you have one outfit for the entire production.
You would think it was 17.
Movie magic.
17. Yeah.
You're, as I understand, I mean, you're clearly front and center of the star of this one. You're on the production, I would imagine, every single day.
Yeah, I think I had one day off. Mm-hmm.
Very physical role.
Yeah, pretty physical.
So does that come naturally, the physicality of a performance? Because that's so important to something like this.
Yeah, I was pretty lucky. I just finished filming Guns Akimbo, and we did 4 or 5 weeks of stunt training for that.
Yeah.
So with this, it was actually a lot easier because Guns Akimbo, there's a lot more physicality.
Well, we're going to get to the Mr. Radcliffe in a second. Don't worry.
So there was a lot of stunts, but I wanted it to look messy because in Guns Akimbo, I play a proper fighter.
Yeah.
So with this, it was fun because I could make it a little sloppier and messier, and the desperation of her come out in that sense.
And I've heard the filmmakers talk about this a bit. I mean, I think one of the impressive things that you guys were able to achieve is modulating a performance like this, which is like it you need to see the progression of like it dawning on her of what the fuck is happening and sort of starting to absorb the situation she's in. And then by the end, kind of what she has to kind of the occasion she has to rise to. Mm-hmm. Again, a relatively short shoot. This isn't like a 100-day shoot. It's probably, 20 or 30
days? Yeah,
it's
like 26 days or something.
So when you're in it, is it, what's like the challenge once you're like in the throes of it? Is it sort of like figuring out where you're at in the story and kind of figuring out where Grace should be at that point or what?
Well, when I met with Radio Silence, I really wanted to prepare because she has a lot of discoveries throughout the film.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to work that out before we even got on set, because I know a lot of times, you know, we were shooting really quickly.
Sure.
And so we planned all of that ahead of time, and especially because we're shooting out of order. No one shoots in order these days. So I could go back to the script and figure out, okay, so she should
Grace level 6
here.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And so we figured out the arc of each scene so that it wouldn't get too repetitive, because I know a lot of horror films, you know, the protagonist can play or be shocked or scared over and over again. Yep. And I really wanted her to pivot each time and get angry and then determined and then just frustrated or just completely over it, you know. And starting with that shock and frighten, and instead of getting more and more afraid and just unraveling, I wanted her to get mean.
Yeah, go full on Ripley by the end.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Are there templates for this? Like, are there films that are referenced by the filmmakers, or is that helpful for you as an actor, or is it sort of just going with your gut in terms of what's in the script?
I think it's different for each job. Sometimes you really want those references to get a sense of what the filmmakers are thinking. But with this, it was really... the tone was already on the paper, and then when we were on the location, it was so beautiful, and we really got a sense of how grand this, you know, and
the settings
were
perfect for it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And then just playing the truth of the scenes, even though they're so ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know,
it is an interesting negotiation that I think, like, I feel like all the actors, and this is sounds basic, but it often doesn't happen, are on the same page. Like, there is a reality, but there's also a bit of an archness to some of the performances that's just right. Like, I also love the way it's cast. Like, I don't know, like, the permutations they went, but, like, the fact that Henry Zerny's the patriarch, like, not the biggest name, but he's such a great actor.
Oh, he's fantastic.
And he's just perfect for this.
So good.
One of those actors that every time I see him, like, oh, I wish I saw more of him.
Yeah, he really can play that, he seems very grand and intimidating at first, and then he slowly unravels into this, like, desperate sort of bumbling.
Yeah, they're morons, so this funny. Family. That's kind of the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so jumping around a bit, you mentioned Guns Akimbo. Mm-hmm. I think I might see you in Toronto for that. Are you
going to
go there?
Oh, great, yeah, I'll be there.
Great, I'll be there too. Mr. Daniel Radcliffe, I've spent a lot of time with that gentleman. He's the best.
He's the sweetest. Love him.
He's the best. So I gather this is a unique... I mean, his sensibilities I love. Like, the stuff he's done from Swiss Army.
I didn't know how cool he was. I was hiding my Harry Potter tattoo for the first, 3 weeks of stunt training. And then I forgot to wear long socks. And he was like, is that? And I was like, okay, listen. It's J.K. Rowling. It's not about you.
So what's the tattoo?
It's the Deathly Hallows on my ankle. That's amazing.
So the books or films were big for you growing up?
Oh, yeah, because I think I was a little bit younger, but I was pretty much the same age as Harry growing up.
Right.
Of course, they're ruined now because I've met him.
So when you learned that you were up for this opposite Dan, was that...
Yeah, kind of surreal. Just loved his work, and I loved his choices he's made after the franchise. So I was, and the character was so insane. I was so intrigued at that challenge.
Your character's pretty insane. Yeah, I saw. I think you posted a photo.
Oh, I look insane.
Yeah.
It was a social experiment because I had like a black and silver mullet with no eyebrows, and what? We did equity turnaround, not SAG turnaround, uh-huh. And it took like three and a half hours to put all these tattoos on me. So I would go home with all the tats on sometimes, and we were filming in New Zealand and Germany, and people would cross the street to get away from me, and I'd try and buy dinner, and people wouldn't serve me. They were terrified.
That's fantastic.
It was fun for about 2 weeks, and then it got really sad.
Oh, guys.
It's like, guys, I promise I'm nice. Sliding over with, like, blood-stained hands. Yeah.
So you're coming off of... Okay, so that one I'm very excited to see. That sounds batshit crazy in the best possible way. I would expect nothing less. Mm-hmm. Are you done on Bill and Ted?
I'm done, yeah.
Have they wrapped the whole thing? Or
I think this is the last week.
Yeah, I feel like I'm seeing, like, different still, tweets from
yeah,
people that are starting to wrap.
Yeah, a couple more days, yeah.
So I couldn't be more excited. Like, I can't even express in human words how I'm feeling about this one.
A lot of people are.
Yeah. I've been stalking Keanu, and I know Alex a bit for years about this, and they've told me a little bits and pieces about what was planned. So the fact that he actually made the movie is unbelievable to me. Did it have resonance to you?
No, I had no idea what it was.
No.
I read out the audition. I was sat on my couch and reading out the email, like, oh, you have an audition for Bill and Ted, and I was reading it out loud, and my fiancé just, like, leapt up and started doing this strange Southern Californian voice, and what's wrong with you, dude? Like, what? He's like, oh my god, we have to watch it right now. And I was okay. So he was really helpful again with that audition.
Amazing. So you play Bill's daughter, yes?
Yeah, named after Ted.
Right. It's a close relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Does the apple fall far from the tree? Are
Not at all. It is a tree adjacent.
So basically, you just have to study Alex's performance in the first
two movies. Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was fun.
There must have been a lot of good energy on that set.
Like, oh yeah,
because they've been trying to get this off the ground for
years.
I mean,
it was just so much fun watching them do those characters again.
Yeah,
after 32 years, it was. I mean, a lot of people that came back, it was just a surreal experience for them.
Well, it's the writers are back too.
Same,
it's like the same crew.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, it was just fun to watch them.
Amazing. So you've now seen the originals. You're now well versed.
Yes.
Okay. Because when you're on the press tour for this one, and I'm talking to all of you, I just don't want to embarrass you in front of Alex and Keanu.
No, I mean, they can't be embarrassed.
So where do we go from here, Samara? This is a good moment. We have Ready or Not, which is about to take over the planet.
I mean, I don't know.
You went to like a maniacal cackle for a second.
That's my nervous laughter. I'm sorry.
That's okay. A year from now, we'll be talking about Bill and Ted. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you can steer your own ship right now in terms of like what you're looking for? Or again, is it sort of a thing of like what the world has for me?
Yeah. If anyone wants to hire me, call my agents. I'll be down.
Well, I was excited to talk to you because like, again, not to like give you anxiety or whatever, but it feels like it's a moment for you where like people are seeing like like you showcased in a very special way in a special movie. That will elicit some interesting opportunities. So
I hope so.
Yes, I think we can mark this time.
Okay, great.
Our 40 minutes here to get today
great.
In my sweaty, weird office.
I love this office. I just am looking at this photo over here.
Which one?
Is it Jennifer Lawrence and...
You got it.
Bradley Cooper? Yeah! I've been staring at that the whole time. That is hysterical.
I was wondering what your wandering eye was doing.
Yeah. What is... Oh, okay. I was trying to figure it out the whole time.
That feels right. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a good face mash.
Yeah. It's a little disturbing. I always say it's proof they should never procreate, right? I mean...
They'd make a good baby.
Well...
But just not that baby.
Just not that
baby. Just not that one.
Congratulations on Ready or Not.
Thank you. People
should definitely check it out. It's a unique, fun piece of work. And I look forward to seeing Guns Akimbo and seeing you in Toronto, hopefully.
Thank you.
We'll get some poutine.
Toronto.
Have you ever had poutine?
Yes. Delightful.
I've never had it.
Okay, well, let's go get some.
Okay, perfect.
Great.
That's a day.
Done.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
Yeah.